Good morning. It is 7:49 and you are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Thursday, August 9th, 2012. I'm Holly Keene and this is Raven News. State fisheries managers on Tuesday spotted a mile-long oil sheen coming from a seine boat that sank north of Sitka. The 50-foot Evening Star sank while fishing on August 2nd. The vessel is in Slocum Arm, about 40 miles northwest of Sitka, along the western coast of Chichagof Island. The vessel reportedly had 1,000 gallons of diesel on board. The oil sheen was reported Tuesday during an overflight by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. A smaller sheen was visible immediately following the sinking, and it prompted an emergency closure of the nearby salmon fishery. State officials say no impacts to fish or wildlife have been reported. The Department of Environmental Conservation said a response team from SeaPro left Sitka on Wednesday morning to deploy a boom around the vessel and clean up oil discharges as they occur. SeaPro stands for the Southeast Alaska Petroleum Resource Organization. The Ketchikan-based group responds to oil spills. Operations on removing fuel from the vessel and salvaging it are still scheduled to begin next week. Angoon, Skagway, Haines, Pelican, and some other port cities will see ferry schedule changes next summer. The draft sailing plan for May through September of 2013 alters some times and routes. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports on what may or may not change.
This year's summer ferry season has more than a month to go, but the Marine Highway has already drawn up next year's sailing plan. Officials are distributing copies of a draft schedule and taking comments through later this month. Lynn Canal Dayboat Service is among the changes. Ferry Chief Mike Neusel says next year, the Malaspina will sail round trip 6 days a week from Juneau. That's one more than this year, which included 2 half-day, halfway trips with a night spent in Skagway.
That didn't really go over very well with communities, Haines and Skagway, and it got away from the true dayboat concept of that ship running the same route virtually every day.
Last year, the Malaspina overnighted in Skagway, sailing daily to Haines and Juneau and back. Skagway business owner Jan Rentmore, who serves on the town's ferry committee, says that hurt commerce.
We found when the ferry was homeported in Skagway for those 3 years of 2009, 2010, 2011, that was a very inconvenient schedule for people who wanted to travel through the region.
Next summer's schedule also makes changes to the Juneau-based Lacandes schedule. Some will clear space for other ships to dock at the capital city's Auk Bay terminal. The small ferry will add an overnight stop in Pelican every other week. Neusel says it will save on overtime and improve service.
So instead of leaving Pelican and getting to Juneau in the middle of the night, you can leave Pelican in the morning and get to Juneau in a reasonable time. And a lot of people come here to do shopping or business or whatever, and hopefully that will help facilitate that and make it easier.
The Lacandes will also overnight weekly in Angoon, adding to the village's twice-a-week fair-weather port calls. And Hoonah will continue getting a weekly overnight Lacandes stop. The small ferry will continue its sailings to Gustavus, a recent port addition, but the schedule will change.
It's similar. It's not identical. There are some minor changes to that, and that's based on the changes that we had to make with the Lacandes serving a variety of different ports, but still good service to Gustavus, but slightly different than what it is this year.
The Juneau-based fast ferry Fairweather will remain on the same schedule to Sitka and Petersburg this year. It will run 4 days a week in May and June, then 7 days a week in July. Some Sitkans have asked for more service in the early summer. Neusel says that's unlikely anytime soon.
That's really a cost savings measure. It's expensive to operate that vessel, and the traffic volume in May and June hasn't quite ramped up yet to warrant 7 days a week.
Like all seasons, some schedules will vary as ships are tied up for overhaul and repairs. The Columbia, which connects southeast to the lower 48, will get new engines next fall. Neusel says that will kick off a schedule shuffle.
So in September of 2013, the Columbia will go out of service basically a month before it typically does, and the Malaspina will shift from being the Northern Lynn Canal day boat to actually doing the Bellingham run in place of the Columbia, and Taku will shift up to fill Northern Lynn Canal.
The draft 2013 summer ferry schedule information is available online. Comments are due prior to August 28th. That's the day officials will hold a teleconference to hear suggestions from community leaders and passengers. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
You can read the proposed schedule details through our website, kcaw.org, and there's also information on how to comment on the schedule. A new course has given college students a new perspective on living in Southeast Alaska, and it happens largely from the vantage point of a kayak. From Wrangell, here's Ann Hillman.
The Tatoosh School kayakers completed their maiden voyage last week in Wrangell. A group of four university students and their two instructors paddled along the Inside Passage as part of a new hands-on college-level ecology and resource management course.
We kayaked a lot, approximately 208.34 miles. And
that's Brandy Lynn Welch, one of the students. They spent 20 days of their 40-day excursion out on the water. None of the four students had ever kayaked before, so they underwent rigorous safety training. They say none of them ever flipped, and the hardest part of kayaking, once they were used to it, was wearing dry suits for the last few days of paddling when visiting LeConte Glacier.
Physical exertion while having the blood cut off from your hands and your head, kind of not the best.
Put a little crimp in their style.
Instructor Peter Chalet chimed in at the end. He and Aaron Steinkruger developed the school with the idea of getting students out of the classroom and into the field to experience new ecosystems and the people who use them. The group started in Ketchikan, then visited places like Prince of Wales Island, the Harris River, and Wrangell. In addition to paddling with whales and seals and experiencing the weirder parts of nature.
Friday the 13th, the day that two eagles came screaming and crashing into our woods, fighting over a freaking shark head.
The students also spoke with loggers, resource managers, scientists, and others who rely on the Tongass Forest for their survival. They attended academic classes held at their campsites. All of the students, including Welch, said it changed their perspectives on forestry issues.
I really enjoy being reminded that things are a lot more complicated than I like to make them.
Mm-hmm.
I can't just, in my head, say logging is bad, or, you know, while I sit here reading my amazing reader made out of paper.
Zoe Wiggers says she now sees the industry in a more holistic way.
I guess you could say I'm sort of a hippie, but now that I've kind of come up here, and it's like, timber is so much more than, like, an industry up here. It's definitely, like, a lifestyle, and there's issues, and it, like, really affects everybody. And it's definitely a necessary thing. Like, there's just no way around it. And so I think that with the proper management, like, the timber industry is kind of a beautiful thing up here.
Winter Larson says they gained a sense of place by interacting with the communities and kayaking and camping in the wilderness.
The philosophy of this program and the mission of this program is to kind of instill a sense of place and value in that sense of place. And I think that experiential learning in that way is really, really important. And I've always seen that as a valuable tool to, you know, bring anywhere you go.
The Tatoosh School is based out of Portland in the winter and around the Southeast in the summer. This is their first summer of offering academic college courses. Their second group of students will start in Wrangell and start paddling toward Ketchikan this week. In Wrangell, I'm Ann Hillman.
The parent company for the Kensington Mine near Juneau is reporting strong second quarter sales and production figures. Coeur d'Alene Mines produced about 4.9 million ounces of silver and more than 63,000 ounces of gold during their three-month period that ended June 30th. That translates to more than $254 million in sales. On a conference call for investors Tuesday, Senior Vice President of Operations Randy Buffington said Kensington gold production nearly tripled from the first quarter to more than 21,500 ounces. He says recently completed infrastructure improvements at Burners Bay Mine led to a 50% reduction in operating costs to $1,348 per ounce of gold produced.
We remain focused on achieving sustainable production levels at Kensington and expect cash operating costs per ounce to decline further to $900 per gold ounce by the end of the year.
Coeur d'Alene continues to look for new deposits at Kensington. Miners conducted nearly 15,000 feet of core drilling during the second quarter. Most of it was in an area called Raven, located about 2,000 feet west of the main ore body. Additional exploration drilling took place in an area called Kensington South. The company also conducted a helicopter-borne geophysical survey to identify future drill targets. Coeur d'Alene's other mines and assets are located in Mexico, Bolivia, Argentina, Australia, and Nevada. U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski is holding a forum next week on the impacts of the federal health care law. Murkowski says good health care should be more accessible for Alaskans, but she says this law isn't the answer for providing that. Her office cites a report by an insurance company that found the law would impose more than $340 million in new taxes for Alaskans. Her office says the full impacts of the law are still being calculated. A release announcing the event says a doctor, real estate agent, and a small business owner have been invited to speak about the economic drawbacks of the law on their work. The forum is scheduled for Wednesday in Anchorage. The owner of the Diamond M Ranch in Kenai have been named the 2012 Farm Family of the Year. State agriculture officials announced this year's honor goes to the Carol and Joanne Martin family. The couple met in 1961 at a cooperative extension service office in Colorado. They married a year later and moved to Alaska in 1963. They began their ranch in 1975, raising horses and cows. They also have sheep, pigs, and goats for 4-H projects. Their children have been involved in 4-H both locally and on the national level. Carol Martin will be inducted into the National 4-H Hall of Fame later this year. A boater who has been missing since Sunday in the Ketchikan area was found Wednesday just north of Knutson Cove. KNY reports the man had grounded his 19-foot boat on rocks. He was waving a flare when spotted by a private helicopter. He was picked up by the Coast Guard crew in Ketchikan. The Coast Guard has suspended its search after covering more than 1,400 square miles, and the man had been reported missing when he failed to arrive in Metlakatla from Knutson Cove. And that's all from Raven News. If you missed any of our stories or would like to hear them again, visit us online at kcaw.org. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka.